WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the war in Afghanistan may be winding down for American troops, but not yet the controversies that affect them. In the last week, the VA hospital scandal and the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange have been the two hottest topics in Washington. Let's get a take on both now from Paul Rykoff, founder of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Hi, Paul. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much, Brian. Good to talk to you again.
First, how shocked were you by the revelations about the VA hospitals and the vets who had died there? I mean, the VA hospital system generally has a very good reputation. It's even used as a model often for how to do health care reform.
Well, we weren't shocked at all, and veterans around the country weren't shocked at all. I've been talking to you and a variety of folks in the media for almost a decade about the problems at VA, specifically around access to care. That's the real problem here, is that folks are stuck waiting over and over again. I mean, just here in New York, as an example, we've been talking about the VA backlog for years. The average days pending for a claim is 164 days. About 50% of the claims here in New York City are backlogged. We've known that for years. Now, this controversy surrounds Phoenix, where 40 veterans may have died on wait lists, but there are other places where we know veterans have died waiting. So there have been numerous IG reports, GAO reports, testimonies, and the reality here is that Secretary Shinseki, former Secretary Shinseki now, wasn't listening, and the president wasn't listening. We've been trying to get through to them for years about this, and unfortunately, it took this national controversy, and it's not over. The VA, is IG alone, is still investigating 41 other cities. We continue to get bad news out of Phoenix, and even today, getting more bad news out of Texas. So this is far from over, and we're hoping that the American public will stay focused and that they will force Washington to finally come up with real solutions that can deliver for our vets.
If the problem is waiting lists, is the problem mismanagement or is it simply underfunding?
Well, the problem is total corruption, it sounds like, right now. I mean, VA employees are cooking their books. They're lying to their bosses about wait times. There are 1,700 folks in Phoenix alone who are on a secret waiting list. And now it looks like across the system, people were taught to do it this way. So it's really bordering on criminal right now. We've called for criminal investigations. There has to be a total culture change across the VA before we can even find out if VA even knows how much money they need. We think there is probably a need for more funding, but VA has been so unreliable in projecting for future demand, for being accurate about wait times, that it's hard to really tell. So we need a strong new leader to lead the VA into the 21st century, and we need a comprehensive plan from the president. That's why IAVA has called for what we're calling a Marshall Plan for veterans, an 8-point plan that'll finally turn around the VA and restore the confidence that veterans of all generations across the country have been waiting for really decades.
So veterans, let's crowdsource this story. Help us report this story. If you've been using the VA hospital system on any regular basis for anything, and you can be a veteran of any war, as long as you have recent experience with VA hospitals in our area, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. This hasn't been reported so much as a New York area problem, but is it? Do you have wait times that you think are unacceptable at VA hospitals? Do you think this is causing people's health to get worse or perhaps even causing deaths in some cases, as we've been hearing out of Phoenix, for example? 212-433-WNYC. And also vets of Afghanistan in particular and Iraq, what do you think of the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange? Do you think this puts future troops at risk because of the incentive, perhaps, for terrorists to take prisoners in the future? What do you think of the Bergdahl story where he apparently walked away from his base and perhaps some of his colleagues died trying to trying to find him. So on the VA hospitals and Bo Bergdahl veterans, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Paul Rykoff, founder and executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Do you have a plan for change, Paul, at the VA hospitals?
We do, absolutely. And we're trying to step above the partisanship. And there's a real covering your butt situation going on in Washington. Both sides are scrambling to try to show that they're involved in this. And there's been, I think, 40 different pieces of legislation just offered in the last few days. But IAVA has laid out for the president what we call a Marshall Plan for veterans. It's time for national leadership from the president that can show specific action items for far beyond the VA. So number one is to appoint a new leader, someone that's very familiar with our generation, the post 9/11 generation, who can really turn around the VA. We want criminal investigations. We want full implementation of the IG report from Phoenix. We want to pass something called the VA Management Accountability Act, which was endorsed by Shinseki on his way out, which would give the secretary the authority to fire underperforming senior executives. We know that's been a huge problem here, and if he doesn't have the tools, the new secretary is going to fail as well. There are four other points. If folks go to IAVA.org, they're all there. But we're trying to be specific, bipartisan, and proactive. But we really need presidential leadership here. They were very slow to respond to this. It was over 4 weeks that this scandal was in the news before the president even made a statement. And now we've got a cabinet secretary that has resigned in scandal, and it's quickly falling from the front pages. So we need Washington and the president to stay focused on this, and we need folks to pay attention to what our veterans need, because they've been calling out about these issues for decades.
Are you saying that the Secretary of Veterans Affairs does not have the authority to fire incompetent people under him?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, far too often it's very difficult for him to fire for performing senior executive service employees. You know, Secretary Shinseki had an honorable career of service. He was a good man, but he continued to bang his head against a bureaucracy he couldn't move. It's deeply entrenched. It's been that way for decades. So the VA Management Accountability Act sailed through the Congress, and now it's at the Senate. We hear today that Senator Sanders for the Democrats and Senator McCain for the Republicans are trying to hash out a deal, but unfortunately the Senate is again at gridlock. They can't even seem to get together on veterans issues in the midst of a crisis. So throughout this year, Congress has been really getting in the way of progress. The House has tried to move things through, and the Senate has been where good ideas go to die. And we hope that's not the case this week, and they can actually get something through.
John in Plainsboro, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. You're an Iraq vet, I understand?
Yeah. Yes, I'm an Iraq veteran.
Thanks for your service. And do you use the VA healthcare system?
Yes, I've used the VA system extensively since 2006 when I got out.
And?
And there's a number of problems, and I feel like I can comment on them because I did healthcare as a corpsman in the military, and now I'm finishing my nursing degree. And first problem that I had was the psychiatrist that I was linked up with that was close to where I lived was borderline incompetent, and he said to me that he doesn't believe in PTSD, and he used to lecture, and nobody in the clinic liked to use him. So what I had to do is now I have to go to a psychiatrist an hour and a half drive away in Lyons, New Jersey, deal with traffic, deal with my schedule, and you know, that's a huge inconvenience to have to drive an hour and a half and not have the ability to use anybody else. And the other problem is with prescription medication. You know, I'm on a few different prescription medications, and the system that they use to get the prescriptions relies a lot on the veteran having to keep track of the medications themselves. And then, like, when I'm getting close to finishing my prescription, I have to call and get it refilled. And if I don't keep on track of that, it takes them 7 to 10 days to send it to me. So I end up, just this last week, I ran out of my prescription medication, and I ended up paying out of pocket at a minute clinic at CVS so that I could get enough of the medication to hold me over until they can get it sent to me.
So is this just normal kind of health insurance bureaucracy, which could happen in the private sector, could happen anywhere? Do you think there's something particular to the VA and the kinds of problems that our guest has been talking about, John?
I feel like from using both VA and civilian, I feel like the bureaucracy in the VA system is much more entrenched. And I feel like there's a resistance to changing that bureaucracy. There's so much red tape and so much to overcome that when you're a veteran suffering, you know, a lot of times you just don't have the energy to fight against that. You know, there have been times where I thought, you know what, screw it. I'm just not going to go to my appointments. I'm just not going to get my medication because I'm going to come up against all this bureaucracy.
John, I hear you. Thank you very much for chiming in. But I want to hear what I think is going to be a very different experience from Stanley in Somers in Westchester. You're on WNYC. Hello, Stanley.
Hello. I'm a World War II vet, and every year I go to Carmel and they check my eyes. I get glasses. The very extremely thorough examination. The glasses are provided once a year free.
Man, you're in good shape if you're a World War II vet and all you need from the VA is glasses.
Not quite. But in order to do that, a general practitioner examines me, and she has recommended hearing aids. I go to Castle Point and I get hearing aids, and also she checks my balance and so on. Turns out I've needed a walker, and they sent me there, had a walker fitted for me.
Only very good experiences.
Yeah, the one thing is Castle Point's a little distant for me. It's a 45-minute drive from
right.
where I am.
But once you get there, all good.
Well, the thing about it is that the interpersonal contact is positive. They're just very nice. They go out of their way. They're considerate, and they follow up.
Good. I'm glad to hear it, Stanley. Thank you. And I'm going to go to another, I think, positive story about VA care. Balfour in Queens. You're on WNYC.
Hey, how you doing, Brian? How's everything? All
good,
right.
good. Where'd you serve?
I'm a veteran of Iraq in 2006 and Afghanistan in 2010. And my VA is the Fort Hamilton VA in Brooklyn. And I find it absolutely spectacular service. I'm sure a lot of people are going to get upset with me, but I've been going there for my last 6-7 years, and I have no problems with it. It's clean. They've never delayed any of my appointments. They mail my medication. The prior caller said that he had a problem that they missed by 7 or 10 days. But, you know, you got to plan ahead. If you know that you're running, you know, somewhere, you got to take your own responsibility for your own medication. You know, there's literally hundreds of thousands of veterans. I might be in a minority, but I have no problems at all. I think very highly of my VA in Brooklyn, and if they're hearing this, I hope they're hearing this, because they're getting a bad rap. But I think that the VA in Brooklyn is exceptional.
Another satisfied customer.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to take one more call, raising a policy question. Gary in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Well, you heard him, your guest, say that no one can be fired. He's a career bureaucrat. You also have an agency that can't go out of business, no matter how poorly it's run. So I believe that if no one owns a place, no one is accountable for that place. You see that in the post office, the DMV. They're not service-oriented. There's no incentive to serve the individual.
Gary, this, thank you. And Paul Reichoff, that point goes to a policy debate that is out there constantly between right and left, where people like Paul Krugman point to the VA hospital as public health insurance that works, the VA system. It's single payer. He's written many times. And so we should go to a single payer system in the United States rather than all this craziness that we have. But now with these scandals, people are turning around who are more conservative politically and making the point that Gary just made. Oh, this is what happens when you have
right.
no competition.
Right.
Does this inform you at all in terms of how to think about single payer?
Well, here's the reality, Brian. There's an old saying that if you've seen one VA, you've seen one VA. This is a system that, when it performs well, can make that argument for one side, and when it performs poorly, it can make the argument for the other side. And that's what's emerged in these last few weeks, is now people are kind of pushing their pre-existing political agendas based off of the results of the VA. What your callers also revealed is that new vets are surging into the system, and they have new needs. They have post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injuries, and they are struggling to get access. Only about 55% of them actually access VA care. Now, older veterans like Stanley are generally well-served. They're going in for hearing issues and for glasses. And what we need is a VA that can serve everybody at that high level. And it's just not happening consistently enough. What we continue to hear from our members, and they are average age in their late 20s, is that about 55% think the VA is not getting the job done. And so, you know, that's going to be the debate. That's going to be what we have to push forward, is basic customer service and making VA work. We want the VA to succeed. There are a lot of great VA employees, but it's just not consistent across the board. And one last point I want to emphasize. Groups like IAVA often fill the gap. So if there are callers listening right now and they're struggling with the VA, or they're not eligible at the VA, for example, if they got an other than honorable discharge, IAVA's got a rapid response referral program that's there to help them through that transition. If you go to IAVA.org, we've got caseworkers standing by covering all of New York City and all of New York State, and we can help fill those gaps. So I would encourage folks listening, you know, you can push on Congress to change the VA, and in the meantime, you can support community-based nonprofits, veterans groups who are serving at that critical point of need. And we need the mayor to step up here. The mayor has an opportunity to lay out his strategy for veterans, and the speaker as well. We met with her last week. She was open to our ideas, but we need a plan. We need a strategy to serve the almost 200,000 veterans of all generations that live in New York City.
IAVA, by the way, if you're just tuning in, standing for the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. The founder and executive director, Paul Rykoff, with us for another few minutes. What do you think of the prisoner exchange for Bo Bergdahl?
You know, I thought there was a lot of speculation in the news when the plane went down, and then this happened. I think we don't have the facts on the ground. And there are a lot of folks out there who are pontificating and really don't know what happened. For the veterans community, there's one thing we know. If you are taken captive, you will be returned. America will go after you to whatever amount of time, whatever amount of resources it takes to bring you home. And that's an important message to our troops. We are taught that in basic training, and I think that's the message we're sending now. Now, I'm not going to get into the politics of how much each terrorist is worth, but if it was me, or it was one of my brothers or sisters, if it was your kid, you'd probably want them to bring that guy home. And if he needs to face trial, he can do that when he gets here. But the bottom line is, in America, we don't leave our own behind. And I think that's an important point to remember in the midst of all this political debate.
Jonathan in Washington Heights, I think, is a vet who wants to weigh in on Bergdahl. Hi, Jonathan. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. And thank you, Mr. Rico, for all your hard work for us veterans. I got to say, I agree 100%. I'm an Army reservist now, and it's a solemn charge. You know, you take care of soldiers, and taking care of soldiers doesn't mean deciding on your own, oh, well, you know, he was a jerk off or whatever. We don't really, nobody likes him, and we're just going to leave him out there, because you're responsible. You're representing the American government, and the soldier's family left. They sent the soldier to war with you. You know, and how are you going to go back and look that family member in the face and say, oh, yeah, your son, he went, you know, he left the wire, but we didn't really look for him because we didn't like him very much. It's like the Danny Chen thing. That was it's a disgrace.
How about this issue, Jonathan? I'm going to leave you on the line and let you and Paul respond to this clip from Morning Edition, because people have been raising the issue about the swap, that it could lead to more encouragement to take more American troops as prisoners if it looks like we'll be willing to make trades of, you know, of terrorists or others for them. Listen to the question that Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition today asked a former hostage negotiator, or a prisoner, really, negotiator for Israel named Giora.
Would you say that it's appropriate to negotiate a prisoner exchange like the one that got Bo Bergdahl back in U.S. custody, even if it does lead to later terrorist attacks?
Yes. And I understand the moral argument, but here's the difference. When I negotiate the release of a soldier, it's an immediate. I bring him home. The argument that of possible potential terrorist attacks down the road is amorphous, and it's a potential. It's not an immediate.
What do you think about that, Jonathan? You willing to make that trade? If you were still on the front lines and somebody made that trade, and you have policymakers, and he's not a policymaker, and probably no politician would be as candid as he was, that you make that trade under the principle that you were stating before, that you bring every American home, every single one, if you possibly can, after they're captured, if it creates a risk of further kidnappings.
You know what, Brian? These guys, they wake up in the morning, they have their cereal, and they plan how to kill Americans. I'm not afraid of them.
There you go. Simple and to the point. Paul Rykoff, you on the same page?
Hey, look, Brian, do we really think that the terrorists aren't trying to capture and kill Americans every day anyway? I mean, that is their focus, and we have a sacred obligation to our troops to take care of them. We never want to get in the world of valuing an American soldier's life, I mean, based off the number of terrorists. I mean, it's just absurd, and the bottom line is we got to bring him home. And he's also an intelligence asset to them if they have him. He's an intelligence asset to us now if we have him here, because he's been in their captivity for 5 years. And I think, you know, in the midst of all of this, there's one thing we want people to remember, that now that he's been gone for 5 years, I hope it doesn't take him that long to get care at the VA, because that's how long some folks are waiting. And Bo Bergdahl, you know, is probably going to go to the back of that list when he gets home.
I think Ronald in Bay Ridge has a different take on that. Ronald, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. And this is Ronald in Glen Ridge.
Sorry.
My sister Ruth and her daughter were killed 9/11 in one of the attacks. They were in one of the planes coming from Boston. And I've been waiting since for my day in court, and it was just, it's very, very upsetting to see Obama leave five prisoners go in exchange for one prisoner. Bergdahl, you know, there should have been another way of getting him out.
What could it have been?
Oh, some other negotiation, but not leave five terrorists go in lieu of him, you know? I mean, my God, you know, we need our day in court. And, you know, for all the families, we need to get Guantanamo Bay moving. We need the trial to continue. It's one excuse after another. Nobody's willing in Washington to stand up to the plate and get this trial moving. You know, and, you know, just, can you imagine what the rest of the families are thinking? You know, they're leaving prisoners go now.
Paul Rykoff.
Well, I think you do deserve your day in court, and I think Bo Bergdahl does too. I mean, I think that's America. And, I you know, part of what I'm trying to understand is how many terrorists is an American soldier worth? Is one for one good? Is it two for one? Is it five for one? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, in situations like this, I trust our Secretary of Defense and I trust our president, because they have a lot more information than we do. And I'm glad as a former American soldier myself that they brought this guy home to face trial here and to keep that sacred compact with our troops. I think there are a lot of other political issues that are tied into this and will continue to tie into this. But unfortunately, I think it just underscores how nasty our debate is around the country, and especially in Washington. We can't agree on veterans issues. We can't agree on national security issues. And unfortunately, that's part of why we're in the predicament we are.
And Ronald, I'm so sorry for your loss on 9/11, and I appreciate you raising your voice. Thank you
Absolutely.
Very much for calling in. And we leave it there with Paul Rykoff, founder and executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, talking about the VA situation and the Bergdahl situation. Thank you very, very much.
Anytime, sir. Thank you.